Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration, collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with a filmmaker by the name of Jeff Morrison. He is a, owner and operator of Big Cedar Films. You need to check them out online. That's bigcedarfilms.com. And we talked today about a CBC doc, a first-hand doc that's actually online, and you can get access to it at cbc.ca, called The Missing Tourist. You'll remember this story once you start to get into the interview, and I don't want you to miss this one. You need to stay tuned. Jeff is a thoughtful filmmaker. It's a great film. You need to see it for a variety of reasons. But we talk about a little bit about everything, and we kind of start in Yellowknife. We talk about the notion of story and how about something called forest bathing, which I've certainly never heard of before, but we talk about closure and about mental health issues and I guess really what it means to be human, you know, and finding our way back home. And for those of you who've been listening to my podcast over the years, you know, that definitely is a theme for me. So stay tuned. Jeff Morrison, and the film is The Missing Tourist, coming right up. And don't forget davidpecklive.com for more podcasts, information about my writing, and you can support what we do through patreon.com there. And don't forget rabble.ca as well for more interesting podcasts from Face to Face, but also from others too. Coming right up, Jeff Morrison and The Missing Tourist. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest today, another filmmaker. Imagine that, another filmmaker here on Face to Face today with us from Toronto. We've got Jeff Morrison with us, and we're here to talk about his new film, The Missing Tourist. Jeff, thanks for your time today.
No, thank you, David. Happy to speak with you.
And I think appropriately, you're sitting in a studio right now, are you not?
I am sitting in a sound studio, actually the studio where we mix the film.
Where you mix the film. Well, how
vacant right now.
How cool and how appropriate is that? So you're kind of in a sound booth then.
I am. It probably sounds okay.
It sounds very good, actually. Yes.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. No, it's good. Well, listen, thanks. And congratulations on the film, if I can say that about a film like this. It must have been quite the project and quite the trip, as it were, to as in any film, I suppose, from, you know, beginning idea to end, to seeing it to seeing it live. Can I say congratulations?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm quite pleased with where we ended up with the film and the way that it's been not just received, but also the way it's been perceived. But I think that was something I was a little bit anxious about, and I'm very happy to see the response to it.
Oh, that's great. And while we're on that idea, we'll get back to the perception thing in a second. But just a little plug, it's a first-hand doc, CBC, and apparently going to be available for 6 years. Going forward online as of March the 2nd.
That's correct. Or as long as they keep it up online, cbc.ca/firsthand.
Right, or as long as they keep it up online. Excellent. Very good. So tell me, you know, I mean, let's go right at what pulls you into a story like this? Is it, I mean, there's so many components. This is a story that had a lot of press. Atsumi Yoshikubu, a Japanese tourist who comes to Yellowknife, she disappears. It turns into this mystery, this crime story, etc. So many elements. And by the way, I love your film.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah,
thanks very much.
Really loved it. I love the there's a Have you seen Rectify?
I haven't seen.
Okay, Rectify is a series you need to look at. Anyway, there is a tone. There's a sense in your film. That really spoke to me. The cinematography, the way you edited, the almost the barrenness and the beauty.
No, that's part of it for sure.
Yeah, really spoke to me. So what pulls you in? Are you some sort of crime journalist?
No, this is a project unlike anything I've ever gotten involved in before. I think what pulled me in, you know, as someone who followed this story and heard about it as it was unfolding in 2014, and then as it popped back up into the news back in 2015 as well, I think, you know, just as you kind of described, the elements of the story on the surface are very compelling. You know, a tourist has come from Japan to Yellowknife, this, you know, remote and beautiful place in Canada's far north, and she's gone missing. So I think that enticed a lot of people from the beginning, and that's part of why this became such a big media story at the time. And, you know, five Japanese news crews came to Yellowknife to cover the story. It had an impact.
Sure.
But I think what really drew me in was seeing that there was more beneath the surface, that this is a story that unfolded in a very unusual way. There were some details that weren't revealed to the public. And I think because there wasn't a lot of information shared, I think it made it very difficult for people who were following the story, particularly, you know, the town of Yellowknife, to get closure on it. And so when I got involved, I started talking to a lot of people that were close to the story or who'd covered it, and really tried to see what else I could find out so I could add some context to it and perhaps bring about a little bit more closure. But there was a sense of purpose to it. You know, it wasn't just to cover what seemed on the surface to be a sensational story.
So is this very different from some of the other work that you've done? By the way, your company, Big Cedar Films, you guys have been involved in narrative and doc and so on and TV and film. Do you become a private investigator? I mean, I guess that's kind of the job of a documentarian either way. But with a story like this, it seems like you got to have your magnifying glass out, don't you?
Yeah, that's part of it. There's definitely a large element of that, trying to piece things together. You know, talking to as many people as I could, you know, whether it's journalists, witnesses, you know, trying to understand the background of this subject by, you know, locating people in Japan that knew her, trying to speak to the authorities in Yellowknife, which was not easy from the get-go, and something that only kind of came together in the end. Just knowing that there was more to this story than what had been reported. And there was more that I thought could be shared with the public. Like I said, I've never been involved in a project that had such an investigative bent, and or, you know, from a filmmaker's point of view, that was so composed. That's kind of a different thing for me as well. So I really, really relish that opportunity.
I think,
but,
you know, there's so
many... trying to track it down. It's a challenge.
Yeah, no kidding. And I think, I guess that's the burden or the beauty, I suppose, of being a documentarian and finding the story in the first place, right? And then what are the connections? And, oh, how about this person? And we didn't know that person was connected. And how many times do you hear about a doc film or a great doc film? Well, we didn't really know what we were going to film going in, but it kind of revealed itself.
Yeah, you hear that a lot. What's kind of interesting about this is, you know, I credit the CDC for giving me the space and a little bit of funding to develop this project. They were certainly enticed by the idea, but there was a lot of work that needed to be done before I could start filming.
Right, right.
And, you know, I conducted a number of interviews, a couple dozen interviews during a development phase. And, you know, out of those interviews, I was able to really get a sense of what the story was and then what might be a good structure to explore the story. So when I actually started filming in June of 2016, towards the end of June, I had a good idea of the story that I was going to find and the story that I wanted to tell, but I didn't really know how it was all going to fall into place.
Right.
There were still a lot of question marks. I didn't really know much about the story in Japan, and I didn't have any access to the authorities at that point. So there were definitely a few holes in that, but certainly from the moment we started filming, there was a good idea of what the story was going to be.
So I hope we've created enough of a sense of mystery in our listeners now that they desperately want to see the film, because we really haven't said a word about what the film's about other than her name, Japanese tourist, Yellowknife, authorities, there's this sort of this edge to our conversation. How much do we spill the beans here?
I'm happy to go right into it.
Okay, well, let's spill.
Maybe we can leave the ending.
That's right. That cliffhanger, that nail biter ending. Yeah.
Yeah. No. By all means, let's.
So give us an overview of the story. So we're in Yellowknife. Why are all these Japanese tourists coming to Yellowknife? Let's start there.
Yeah, that was something I didn't know about when
Neither did I.
And I think that's one of the elements that stood out to me from the get-go, which in the end was not all that unusual. So Yellowknife is one of the best located centers in the world to view the Aurora Borealis. It's located on this ring around the northern part of the planet that is just known and just gets much more clear and like bright opportunities to view the Northern Lights. So for years, Japanese tourists have been coming to Yellowknife. There's more people come to Yellowknife from Japan than almost any other country. I know the market's increasing with tourists coming from Korea and China right now, but there's a long history of Japanese tourists coming to Yellowknife. What was unusual about this case is that there's a high season. The winter coming into December, January, February, March, you can't get a hotel room in Yellowknife. It's that busy with tourists coming to see the Northern Lights. There's also a low season. Of course, in the summertime when you're getting nearly 24 hours of daylight, and October and into November when you get more cloudier days in those months than other times of the year. So this person had come in the off season. They'd also come by themselves, which is also very unusual. Like 99% of Japanese tourists that come to Yellowknife either come in groups or come with a partner. So there are a few facts that kind of stood out as unusual from the get-go. And then when she had gone missing, nobody really knew who she was or where she had come from. They just knew that she was gone. And so I think for the authorities in Yellowknife, they had to really pick up the trail as quickly as they could. And
right.
I think they found that quite challenging, too, because, Yellowknife is quite far north. So the time of year that she was there, winter was starting to come on, it was starting to snow, and it made tracking a missing person very difficult.
So you talked about closure and, it seems like, and you bring the family into this, conversation in Japan, you've got RCMP, you've got some other, she was a doctor, you've got other doctors involved. There seems to be one guy who really is seeking closure in this story more than most. He's the journalist, the one journalist at least, and maybe everybody shared that sense of uncertainty. Where do you land at the end of this? Is closure to the film, I suppose, and it airs and reception's been good, and but what about you from a lack of certainty? Where do you stand?
I feel okay about it now. There's a couple different levels of closure, I think, in this story. There's closure on a personal level. This is someone who has gone missing and ultimately, it's a very tragic story when you learn what has happened to this person. But I think there's closure on another level, and this is something that I really tried to inject into the film, and that this was a story that was, that really played out in the media. When someone goes missing, these stories are always covered quite extensively in the media. And the public, for the most part, their relationships with these stories is mediated by the news, the television news, the newspapers, social media. And what happened in this story that I thought was particularly interesting is that there was a real absence of information. There was most of the information that the news media gets is from the authorities. And in this case, the authorities weren't offering a lot of information, particularly at a juncture in the story where there were a lot of questions. So you know, after this woman had been missing for about 9 days, the authorities called off the search and they declared that she had arrived in Yellowknife with a plan to go into the wilderness alone and become a missing person, and that she'd taken steps towards not being found.
Right.
And this left most people in Yellowknife just dumbfounded, totally perplexed. None of the reporters I spoke to could make any sense of it. Most of the people the people in the public I spoke to in Yellowknife couldn't make sense of it either. And so there were a lot of questions, but the authorities didn't have any answers. So I think as far as this played out as a story in the news, it made it very difficult to get closure because there was a real absence of information. So, you know, that was a big part of what I wanted to explore, as well as, you know, the story of this person who'd come here from Japan. I wanted to look at the ways in which we experience missing person stories through the news and how we're able to get closure, particularly in a case like this where there's an absence of information.
One of the guys who doesn't seem to get closure is Japanese, who talks about, you know, maybe she's going to show up again, you know, one day in front of my face. And I think you did a couple of interviews there where they were back to back, and stuffed animals come into play in the film in a big way, which is really quite lovely. But one of the Japanese men said, quote, "I think human beings always seek for comfort somewhere," close quote. And I just, and while he was holding some of these stuffed animals, there was just something really quite tragic and beautiful about that moment. And I wonder, did you have that idea going in that this film ultimately was going to be, you know, even though the tragic story as it plays out is so real and in our face, but there's also this, for me anyway, Jeff, there was a real celebration of life and how we all have this ability to make a difference. I mean, there's about 19 questions, by the way, here, all coming one after the other. But even I want to get to what Carrie said, Carrie Reel's comment about the last person to see this woman alive that we know of, you know, about the ability for all of us to make a difference in somebody's life. I just thought it was really beautiful how this man said, "I think human beings always seek for comfort somewhere."
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a really telling statement, particularly as, I really didn't know that much about this woman's past and about her journey until we got to Japan. And to hear him say that in the interview, I found it to be quite profound, because as we learned about what her life was like back in Kumamoto and Uto in southern Japan, and then particularly in Tokyo, where really we're just kind of like scratching the surface on what her experience was like there. But, you know, as we spoke to some of her coworkers in Tokyo and some people that had known her while she was working at some of these clinics, there was a bit of a pattern that emerged as we spoke to her brother about how she was become estranged from the family. Mm-hmm. Knowing that she was a doctor, knowing that she cared deeply about her patients, you know, to hear that this is a celebration of life, I think that's quite true. You know, I went to Tokyo to try and find remembrances of this woman. I wanted to paint a picture of her that was much brighter and more colorful than just, you know, a face in the news, you know, someone on a missing person poster. And that comment in particular, and I'm glad you noticed that, it really stuck out to me because, you know,
well, I mean, what's really cool to me is there's a sense in which, and no disrespect to the fact that, you know, she's no longer with us, but there's a sense in which she wasn't a missing person. Does that make sense? Like, she touched these people's lives.
Yeah.
She actually had an impact.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is right up my alley, as my listeners will know. You know, we all have this ability to make a difference in the world. The little things can make a big difference, incremental change and tipping point, you know, let's go Malcolm Gladwell. But, you know, the importance of actually making, you know, human contact with others, and who knows what was going through her mind or what her plans really, truly were. And as we find out, it's still quite a mystery, but I think for me, that celebration was, wow, this woman had an impact.
Yeah.
And maybe she didn't know.
Yeah, it's really hard to say. Like, it's clear that she certainly touched people. She was, everyone who we met who sort of knew of her professionally, you know, commented on how sweet she was. And, there's a particular anecdote, and, you know, it goes on for a little while from one of her former patients where he describes the first time that he met her professionally.
Right.
And how she was so deliberate about having these stuffed animals there, these items that people seek comfort in, and right. putting a sign on the door saying not to be disturbed, just seeing how thought out everything was in her practice and how much she cared for him and how much she helped him. And then hearing, you know, from her other colleague and the other director of the hospital, again, how professional she was and how loved she was by her patients. It painted a real, real picture of this person that we hadn't seen necessarily in the coverage in the news. So, you know, I think it's important to make that, you know, make that known.
And is that something that became more of a focus for you as you got deeper into the story? Would you say, hey, I want to make this statement about journalism as a general rule, that we really do only scratch the surface, that there's, you know, one of the thoughts I had as the film played out was, wow, it really truly is fascinating how we all have such intricate stories. Mm-hmm. You know, the lives we've led, the high school photos, you know, mm-hmm. all these connections and these beautiful things that we just kind of almost walk on by.
Yeah.
With regard to, you know, and again, I'm going to go back to the celebration of life for me, which to me is kind of ironic and sort of paradoxical based on not only the location and the geography and the way you shot the film and cross-cut it and so on, but also, yeah, just a reminder that, man, it's worth staying in the moment maybe more often than not. Mindfulness is the way forward, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I think I was fortunate to have you know, a certain format to work in.
Right.
I think being able to give this story a proper documentary treatment,
yeah.
I think is giving it the justice that it probably needed, and you know, gave people close to the story the closure, hopefully, that they were seeking.
Do you you know, you used the phrase remote and beautiful place,
mm-hmm.
and you were clearly referring to the geography, no doubt.
Yes.
Of Yellowknife. I've had all due respect to Yellowknifeans everywhere, don't have a whole lot of desire to go there in the near future. However, you really do communicate what a beautiful yet barren place this really is. And I just kind of wondered, as you were making the film, how intentional that was, you know, metaphorically, you know, about, I don't know, just about us, you know, each and every one of us, the human condition. I mean, mental health issues play a significant role in your film. Does that make any contact with reality?
To a certain extent, you know, in some ways, like, I wanted the film to be quite grounded. Like, we filmed Yellowknife as we saw it and experienced it there. And, we tried to cover the story with, you know, what an experience might be like there, and what you might see if, you know, with these related images. You know, there's it's funny, during the development phase, I kind of went down a path exploring the idea of, like, nature and forest as therapy.
Right.
And thinking about how that is how it is traditionally viewed, particularly in Japan. There's a practice called Shinrin Yoku, which is the art of, like, it's also known as forest bathing, and going in for therapeutic reasons, spending time.
Did you say forest breathing?
Forest bathing.
Oh, forest bathing.
Yeah. So it's, you know, the practice of going into the forest and, you know, rejuvenating oneself,
sure.
and one's soul, and coming out and feeling a little bit stronger and more energized. And I thought one of the interesting things to perhaps explore in this story is the idea of going into the forest, not necessarily for the inverse reason, but, you know, as a way, you know, as a decision, as a very conscious decision to end one's life. And it ended up not being a viable thread to explore in terms of the therapeutic reasons, but
right.
it certainly led to more research into the latter, and people who choose to end their lives in such a place, at least in Japan.
Yeah, well, I loved the... And I guess we're kind of tipping our hat a little bit here, but not so much. We're going to leave a little element of mystery, I think, to the interview and the conversation. But you do talk to which I was surprised there's even someone with this title, but a suicidologist.
Mm-hmm.
And in Japan, there's this sense of, you know, she talked about distinct cultural patterns and people just sort of wanting to disappear. And you even bring this idea into the film of some people just want to disappear temporarily. They just want to see if they are loved, if they are included, if they are embraced by others. And yet there's this sense in Japan, at least, that there's no moral judgment or any kind of, you know, condemnation attached to it. If you want to disappear into the forest and not return, I found that really fascinating.
Yeah, I found it very fascinating too. I thought it was a very worthwhile point to contemplate and to at least throw out there and give the viewer a chance to really digest and process as it relates to this story. You know, it's hard to look at it and not hear it as a generalization of such,
right.
and it very much is, right?
Like, right.
I think there are traditional attitudes and perceptions about suicide in Japan that are changing, and I think it's long been a very very important and critical issue there. And you know, it's constantly evolving, and perceptions about it are changing as well. But that is a characteristic of how I guess it has been traditionally perceived and understood in Japan.
There's a sense for me, and that this film was about, at least this is what it played for, like to me anyway, as I watched it. And I know so often a great film is about what you bring to the table and the place and the space and the context you find yourself in when you're actually watching it. But there was a sense of finding your way home. You know, you go on a trip, you're a tourist to find something else and something other, but there's always this wonderful sense of, oh, well, I know I'm going to come back home. Or, you know, anytime I've been camping, there's a sense of, you know, wanting to get back home. And I just kind of wonder if that was an intentional, you know, from as a director and the writer of the film, if you kind of had that theme or that idea as well, because it certainly seems to play out in, you know, in a variety of ways. You know, mm-hmm. Carrie saying that, you know, she should have stopped and she should have helped this person. I mean, I think this idea of, you know, kind of this idea of we're all in it together, right? This community. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm completely nuts to drawing some of these conclusions on the film, but that's kind of where I went.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think something that's, it's certainly mentioned in the film, but that came out in every interview I did on it, was how much people cared about her there,
mm-hmm.
how much they care about people that come to visit Yellowknife. A few people pointed out to me how, you know, they'd moved there from the Maritimes or the GTA, and they have family and friends here, and they never come to visit. So when you have a tourist that's going to come there from the other side of the world to come and spend money and spend their time there and enjoy the place that you're very proud of and that you enjoy living in, it means a lot. And so, you know, this is the first time that something like this had happened, certainly under these circumstances. So I think people cared quite deeply about her and really, really wanted her found safely. You know, that sense of coming home, though, I think that's, it was quite intentional. And the film plays out in a very purely linear fashion. Mm-hmm. And from the point when we leave Yellowknife, the thing's still quite muddled, not really sure what happened.
Mm-hmm.
There is a sense, and I hope to leave the viewer with a sense like, we need to come back and wrap this up and figure out what's going on. To me, it felt like a good time to have a bit of a departure and go to Japan and add some more context and fill in some of the gaps in the background. But, you know, my hope is that you will feel like we're going to get some closure and we're going to get there and we're going to come back to Yellowknife and find out how this is resolved.
I love, you know, we'll I guess we'll probably wrap it up, wrap things up here shortly. And I know you got another meeting coming up, Jeff, but this idea that we all matter, you know, that every person matters, that, you know, in fact, right near the end of the film, I think it's somebody again from Yellowknife who, as you say, there's this community. She was talking about volunteers coming together to try to find this woman and to, you know, just, this is our community. This is what we're made of out here. But she talked about this idea of, you know, if somebody's in crisis, there's always one person out there who can help. And it just really struck a serious chord with me in the context of a film like this. And it makes you wonder to what degree somebody like Atsumi was maybe reaching out, but maybe not. And I guess that's part of the uncertainty. And that's maybe where the lack of closure, I suppose, you know, comes to bear.
Yeah, I think the film gives as much closure as we can possibly have on this story.
Yeah.
Trying to end on a moment of hope to a certain degree, as much as you can on a story like this. It's difficult, you know. There are elements of this story where we will never absolutely know for sure. You know, I think there's some really important points that are made towards the end of the film, which don't quite blow things back out in the open again, but hopefully leave the viewer with, you know, an idea of what it's like to actually process a story like this, and how you deal with that when you never are able to really get all of the facts. You know, you have to sort of take what you can get and find as much closure in that as you can. It's difficult. You know, I think we certainly did the best we could with the film to try and inform the viewer as much as possible about what had happened. But you know, I think with a lot of mental health issues, it's really there are intangible factors.
Yep.
It's hard to truly know.
Well, I think it's a beautiful metaphor for life, however sad or tragic it really is. I think the film is a metaphor for life. I mean, honestly, how often do we not get closure, right? We want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we scramble for it. It's what we kind of live for, it seems to me, you know. It's in our film, it's in our advertising, it's in our fiction, it's in our conversation. But
well, I think that's a big part of this film too, is like, you know, and someone in the film iterates it. People want to know, you know,
yeah.
Something like this happens, like someone goes missing. Anytime there's a story that's really blown up in the media, you want to know. You have this inherent human curiosity to know what happened and what the details are. And, you know, I think sometimes it's important to take a step back and look at not just that you want to know, but what do you need to know?
Like,
what do you need to be able to get closure?
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't need all the details. And I think this was a case where you may not have needed all the details, but I think you needed more than what were available to the public at the time.
Right. Well, I think it's honestly, Jeff, it's a beautiful film. It's challenged me on a certain level. It's gonna stay with me, and I think that speaks to the power of a great film and a great story. And again, what a legacy too, right? For this young woman.
Yeah. yeah, that's a, I'm not sure. That's an interesting.
Go. It sounds like you're not buying my legacy comment. That's good.
Well, like,
I mean,
I'd say out of all the people I met in Yellowknife, it's like 98% of the people I met were very encouraged by this project and thought that it could do some good. And that it was a story that should be told and could benefit from having this kind of treatment. But there's, you know, without a doubt, there's going to be people that are going to see it. And you know, even some people that I encountered that would have rather let this one lay, you know, thinking that, you know, sure, this was a tragedy, but like, let's not talk about this. And who knows what this woman's wishes were and whether she would even be happy with something like this. And that's something that's really weighed on me and that I've wrestled with.
I bet.
While making this whole film. And so I don't know, I think it makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable to think of it as a legacy to this person. But I'm happy that there's a more colored picture, you know, we understand a little bit more about who this woman was and where she was coming from, what her experience was and how she touched people in her life.
Yeah.
That I think is,
I guess by legacy, I guess I mean more, it's at least a hopeful way to not to find closure necessarily, but maybe a stepping stone to something else and something other, especially when, you know, I can see how that makes sense though, from a personal, especially when you start meeting family members, right? I mean, that must have changed everything for you, you know, in such an intimate story like this. But I guess I just mean from a sort of a, I don't know, a more.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hopeful kind of, there is some good that can be drawn from this, right?
I think so. And, you know, I really had to balance that, balance his interest.
I bet.
Balance my feelings towards that. Having, certainly having the support and participation of her brother was really critical. Having his voice in the film is absolutely critical, but just knowing that he was okay with us doing this and what our intentions were made us feel like we were on slightly more stable ground and on more emotional ground.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, that's been something that I've certainly had to wrestle with.
Well, I think you, for what it's worth, I think you handled it beautifully, and I think you've directed and produced a meaningful and a thoughtful film, man. I really do, and I want to thank you for it. And congratulations again on The Missing Tourist. I've been talking to Jeff Morrison here today on Face to Face. Thanks a lot, Jeff. I appreciate your time. Big Cedar Films is all you. Is that right?
Yes. I'm the principal of Big Cedar Films.
And can we say at least that you've got something coming up at Hot Docs in the very near future?
We probably can't, but that's totally fine. That's an ambiguous comment in itself. But
nice.
No, I'm very excited about the stuff I'm working on right now. I think now's a really exciting time for documentary. I think audiences are really opening themselves up to new forms of documentary and new approaches and there's so many new platforms and ways to find documentary films and documentary stories. It's a very exciting time to be, making nonfiction work. So
it's cool.
We're excited.
Well, thanks for your time, Jeff Morrison, today on The Missing Tourist. It's on Firsthand. You can get it on cbc.ca. Check it out, Missing Tourist, and may actually be there for the next 6 years. Thanks for your time today, Jeff. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, David. Thanks for all the thoughts you put into the film. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.